This podcast is intended for adult audiences only, and listener discretion is advised as we explore mature topics with a sex-positive and open-minded approach. So remember, the opinions expressed are personal and not professional. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Pineapple Express Podcast, your weekly dose of sex-positive vibes and open-minded conversations about swinging, sex work, and non-monogamy. Join us as we delve into the world of modern swingers, exploring relationships, pleasure, and empowerment. Each week, we will tackle controversial, sex-positive topics through the lens of a millennial swinger. Get ready to embrace the steamy and sensational journey ahead and ride along with us on the Pineapple Express. Hello, welcome to the Pineapple Express podcast, a millennial swingers podcast, and I'm super excited to share this podcast with you guys. I have Ro Moed on today, and they are a non-monogamous coach, anti-non-monogamy, and a writer all over, you know, Instagram, and they have a lot of amazing insight into the non-monogamy space, and I asked them to come on the podcast because I really felt it was important to talk about the subject of stigma and non-monogamy. Non-monogamy is definitely kind of a buzzword right now, right? Like a lot of people are talking about polyamory. There's that new show on Peacock that I still have yet to watch and review, but of course I'm probably going to do a whole podcast on that. But I just find it super, super fun that, you know, we're talking about stigma, we're talking about non-monogamy. It's all around us right now. So I did just, you know, want to mention that like Ro is in the space of, you know, I guess social media and talking about really important, like anti, you know, toxic non-monogamy, right? Which we talk about that a lot in the podcast. So this is a great episode. I think you're really going to enjoy it. But before we get into that, I do want to talk a little bit about kind of my rebranding. So it's no news to anybody that Brad is no longer on the podcast as a host. It's just going to be hosted by me for a while. He's really just not been passionate about this project, and I've understood that and felt that. And I enjoy having Brad on as a guest, but of course, he's a guest, and he'll just come on as a guest from now on. So in 2022, we launched the Pineapple Express podcast with a vision that was seemed really simple for us then, to be like every other swingers podcast. As the podcast continued to grow, I realized that being like everyone else was not doing anything for me, right? We wanted to talk about our lifestyle from our perspective, but there was also an exploitation factor in that. So the Casual Swingers podcast, they actually just did an episode about content creation in lifestyle spaces, and they talked about their experience with content creation as a, you know, lifestyler and how there's a really, really delicate balance, which I 100% agreed with them. And I listened to their podcast over and over. I think I've listened to it 3 times now. And just like, it just resonated with me so much, especially in the space that I'm in. And I feel a lot of changes coming, you know, this way. I mean, influencing in social media and, you know, swinging spaces has been definitely a journey. And the podcast, you know, again, it came out in 2022, about a year and a half after I had been influencing and content creating. And I did want to read, so the Naughty Gym, if you don't know who the Naughty Gym is, they also have their own podcast. They are a sex positive gym. They have a website. I've done a lot of their workouts and I was a part of their program for a really long time. I think I still am. And they're awesome and amazing. But this was their kind of, I guess, their version of what they thought about the episode. And they said, "Fantastic episode, guys. Thank you for initiating this discussion. Your professionalism shines through. As creators, we try to maintain clear boundaries between our public content and personal lives. That's why we refrain from delving into the specifics of our play sessions on our podcast. While we share the journey leading up to these sessions, we believe that what occurs during them is private and respectful to our partners. We wouldn't want them to doubt our intentions or feel exploited by our content. Regarding explicit content, I would be cautious about collaborating with individuals who don't handle it responsibly, using contracts and safety measures to ensure everyone's well-being. As you mentioned, it's a small fraction of the work, so why risk jeopardizing yourselves and our collaborators by cutting corners? It's important to question the intentions and values of potential collaborators in such situations. And this was exactly what I was feeling when I rebranded the podcast. I didn't really know how to say it or how to actualize it, but I remember, you know, when I first started podcasting, I thought, God, I'm just going to do what everyone else is doing, and I'm going to talk about my experiences with other creators and with, you know, my swinger situations and my sexual exploitations. And yes, even though everyone consented to, you know, me putting them on the podcast or me talking about them on the podcast, I just really felt like odd about it, especially when I would listen to like other podcasts that would talk about me and my partner. And it just, I don't know, like bodies were on display and like sexual kinks were on display. And I wasn't the one talking about them from my experience. It was coming from someone else. And it just really made me feel uncomfortable and it made me feel exploited in a way. And I was like, I would never want to make somebody feel bad, especially about something as, you know, delicate as and vulnerable as a sexual situation. And you know, even little things like saying something like, oh my God, this was the best sexual experience I ever had. And then somebody else who have had a sexual experience could listen to that and be like, oh my God, was I not good enough? You know, did I not please this person enough? You know, so I really felt that and understood that. And, you know, I think that that's kind of where the change is coming in and the growth. And like, listen, I have fucked up a lot in the past with content creating. I'm probably still going to fuck up. I am not perfect. I am a human and you are watching me grow right in front of your eyes. And I think that like, as long as we can accept, okay, so like we fuck up and we make mistakes and we grow from them, because we can't grow unless we make mistakes. If we did this perfectly and if everybody resonated with me, then, you know, I would be the only swinger podcaster, but I'm not. There's so many different podcasts that people can listen to and resonate with. And if you resonate with this one, then I'm happy that you're here. If not, you know, I can always let you know about other podcasts that I listen to, you know, that, I listen to a lot of swinger podcasts and they're all different and they're all beautiful and they're all great. And I'm not, this is no shade to anybody who maybe does talk about their sexual experiences. It just, for me, feels exploitative to others. It's like, if I want to exploit myself, then that's fine. If I want to exploit my partner, you know, we signed up for this, but other people didn't. And it just, I don't know, it just didn't feel right. So I wanted to move into a really educational space, a space where we can talk about, you know, our experiences in the lifestyle, but in a way that's not exploitative to others, in a way that feels healthy for everybody. And that's kind of why I decided to change it, rebrand it, and, you know, make tell my story from my perspective, but also like really just resonate with like education and, you know, all those wonderful, beautiful things in the lifestyle that we love. I mean, of course, I'm always going to remain authentic, but I think that for me, it's not really about like where I am on the podcast charts or how many followers I have or how many, you know, how many people like me. For me, it's about being authentic and continuing to create this art form that I feel like, you know, podcasting is my art. And a part of that is like me being authentic with myself. And as much as people like hearing about how many blowjobs I'm giving at events, it didn't feel authentic to me. And it just felt like an invasion on the community. I mean, I think that content creators get a lot of flack because to a lot of swingers, it does feel very exploitative, right? A lot of people are making money and making this a business, and I totally understand that. And listen, everybody has to put food on the table somehow, right? It's part of my business. It's a big part of my business, you know? So I do understand where the concern is coming in from the people who have, you know, traditionalist lifestylers who are like, hey, we want to keep this underground and we don't want to put everything out there, and that's totally fine. And, you know, when me and my partner started content creating, we didn't really know where this was going to take us or how this was going to go. But, you know, the journey has been beautiful, and like, I just from here on out want to create content on my podcast that is conscious and enlightening to people. You know, my platform is very unapologetic, but it's also kind of apologetic as well, right? So what I mean by that is I'm able to say, hey, I fucked up in the past, you guys. Like, I have fucked up. I have said some shit. I have done some shit that I absolutely shouldn't have done and shouldn't have said, but I didn't know what I didn't know. And now we can grow from that. And, you know, I think that we want to celebrate sex positivity on this podcast and celebrate our community and our sexual freedoms and exploration. And I think that this podcast is going to continue to be rooted in integrity, but it's a journey, right? Like, there's no book about this. There's no right way to create content. There's no right way to do this journey, as long as it feels authentic to you. And that could change, right? Like, one day I could be making a podcast about something else, or just talking about non-monogamy, or I could be polyamorous someday, or a relationship anarchist, or monogamous, right? Like, that's a beautiful part of the journey of life, is that we're constantly growing and we're constantly changing. So, you know, of course, I always want to thank my weekly listeners for their continued words of encouragement. You know, I truly love creating this podcast for you, and I hope that you realize, like, it means so much to me, to the people who constantly listen every week. And, you know, I'm just so grateful for everything that's led me down this path. And I'm going to leave you with kind of a quote about trains, because most people think that this podcast has to do, the naming is from the popular strain of weed, the Pineapple Express, of course, the movie, but that was part of it. It was kind of a joke, because everyone thinks because I have locks, I obviously smoke weed, right? And I don't, but I mean, every once in a while I used to partake when, before I was sober, but you know, I think that is kind of a funny thing, and we made it a joke, but it's really about, you know, the express, the train, you know, ride along with me on the Pineapple Express. And it's this train of life, right? And for me, my lifestyle has been a journey, right? And imagine us riding on a train together, and each stop is going to represent different stages or events in our lives. It's going to represent different, you know, stages in my lifestyle journey. And this is one of the stops that we're getting off on, is, you know, de-influencing and trying to not exploit others for the sake of, you know, I guess you could say views or clicks or anything like that. And this is one of those. As the train moves forward without going back, we too move forward in life, and we don't return to the past. So my hope is that you're going to keep riding on the Pineapple Express with me, that you're going to embrace the changes and embrace my changing and my journey. You know, I'm still learning every day, and you know, I could be going to school for the rest of my life and still not know everything that there is to know from every perspective. But this journey is a part of that. So thank you all for listening and, you know, rebranding with me. I hope that you stay a listener, and I hope that the podcast continues to grow. But I hope that it can, not for, you know, views or for listeners weekly, but I hope that it grows because it helps you grow. That's the most important thing. And when we listen to different perspectives, and especially different educational resources, that's what helps us grow. I know that's really helped me grow. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Ro. They are amazing, and I can't wait to share it with you. So Before we dive into today's episode, I want to take a moment to talk about the incredible support that I receive from all of my sponsors. As you all know, creating this podcast is a passion of mine, but it's also an endeavor that requires a lot of time and effort and resources to keep this show alive so that I can give you guys the content that you deserve on a weekly basis. So thank you to my sponsors so that we're able to focus on, you know, this educational content. And I love that they help cover the costs associated with hosting services, equipment upgrades, and sometimes fueling my coffee addiction to keep my creative juices flowing. I'm kind of kidding there, but not really. But more than just financial support, our sponsors are companies and brands that I truly believe in. They offer products and services that I think that you guys, my very valued listeners, can benefit from. And I would never endorse something that I didn't truly believe in myself. So when you hear me mention our sponsors, know that these shout outs aren't just a formality. They're a testament to the effort that we bring to this show and the ears of this episode and all of my episodes. So by supporting them, and you're supporting us and you're supporting this podcast in a real way. And this is so that we're able to have these conversations, share stories, and of course, build community. So stay tuned for our sponsor segment right now. And, you know, check out all these unique promo codes, discounts, and offers that they've provided exclusively for you guys. It's a win-win. You get a great deal and you're also directly contributing to the longevity of my podcast. So as always, thank you guys for listening and a massive thank you to all of my sponsors. Introducing the Sultry Vixen, your one-stop shop for all your sex work and rave wear needs. Whether you're hitting the pole or the festival scene, the Sultry Vixen has got you covered. From dance shoes to box outfits, custom dance outfits, and lingerie to vibrant festival outfits, they've got the perfect gear to make you shine. Stand out with their neon rave accessories and all of their costumes that will take your festival experience to the next level. And they also carry men's and plus sizes. They are a family-owned and operated ravewear / dancewear shop located in Riverside, California. The quickest way to reach them is directly through their Instagram. Visit thesultryvixen.com today for the hottest trends in dance and rave fashion. Dance more and glow more with the Sultry Vixen. Hey, upside down pineapple people. Join the millions of couples enjoying amazing sex with Promescent. I personally love their variety of products they offer, and their aloe-based lube is the only lube I've ever used that doesn't throw off my pH. Brad loves their delay spray, which is clinically proven to help men last longer in bed. Their products have a 60-day money-back guarantee and free shipping on orders in the U.S. over $10. Their shipping is discreet and private, which is perfect for us in the swinger lifestyle. Make sure that you go to www.promescent.com/Kylie for all your discreet sexual health needs. My link is in the show notes. Promescent helps you live your best upside down pineapple life. Hey there, Pineapple Expressers. Are you seeking a splash of excitement in your dating life? Well, get ready for triple, quadruple, or even an orgy of fun with 3Fun, the leading dating app for open-minded singles and couples. Are you interested in exploring the swinger or polyamorous relationships? Maybe you're a couple looking to add some variety to the bedroom. Whatever your preference, 3Fun is designed to connect you with like-minded individuals who embrace open relationships in all forms. Dip your toes into the dating pool where judgment is left at the door and freedom of expression is the norm. With 3Fun, you'll discover a community that values consent, respect, and the pursuit of pleasure in all forms. As a millennial swinger, I love how user-friendly 3Fun is, and signing up is easy and discreet. You can customize your profile, set your preferences, and when you're ready to embark on your journey filled with thrills and connections, start sharing with other individuals, all in one simple swipe. Safety is the top priority for 3Fun. With private photo albums and the latest security features, your personal information stays just that, personal. You're in control of your experience at all times. So why wait for excitement to find you? Download 3Fun today. There's a link in my show notes and join the largest community where fantasies come alive. Three, fun. Let your curiosity roam free. And who knows, you might just find that trio or that couple of chemistry you've been searching for. Welcome, Pineapple Expressers. So I have a fabulous guest on the podcast today. So Ro Moed, or unapologetically on Instagram. And she's here today to kind of, or she, they, correct? That's your pronouns?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to double check. So they are here today to explain a little bit more about polyamory to us, because we love having different kind of guests on our podcast, and especially people in the polyamorous space. So welcome, Ro. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this stuff. I love any opportunity to go on about this stuff. So thank you for giving me the platform to do it.
Absolutely. So in your words, can you explain to us like who you are, what you do on social media, and kind of what you do in the non-monogamy space?
Sure. So I am currently working as a relationship coach. I specialize in working with polyamorous people, but I do work with all sorts of non-monogamous people. I feel that if you're out as a polyamorous coach, people hear, okay, this person's open to alternative relationship styles. So I do get people from the swinger community and all sorts of non-monogamous people, as well as just people who are, you know, queer in some way and feel that they can't find acceptance from coaches in normal normative spaces. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. I've also written a book, which is as of yet unpublished, but we're moving in the right direction. And basically, it's going to be about how the morality that we attach to exclusivity can become corrupted and lead to some pretty unsavory beliefs and behaviors. The phrase toxic monogamy is basically what I'm addressing. I know that a lot of people don't like that, but that's what it's about mainly, and how we can have healthier, more autonomous relationships. So in the non-monogamous space, I'm creating awareness raising content, stuff where I address common misconceptions about specifically polyamory and solo polyamory and relationship anarchy, but also non-monogamy in general, and just, you know, trying to create encouraging content for people who are in that space, as well as educational content for people who are not yet allies or want to be allies.
Interesting. So can you go back really quick to that toxic monogamy word that you said, because I think that a lot of people get confused about what exactly toxic monogamy means. I've talked about it a little bit. I've heard other creators talk about it, but can you just give us a little bit of a framework for what that word means?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or the concept?
It is something that people often misconstrue the same way that people misconstrue toxic masculinity. So mm-hmm. If, for example, toxic masculinity is referring to masculinity that has become toxic, like how stereotypical ideas about what masculinity are harm people who are embodying masculinity, as well as the people who are affected by them. So it's the same for toxic monogamy. It's not that monogamy itself is toxic. It means that monogamy, when it is taken to an extreme, when it's normalized, moralized, can become toxic, can become harmful. That's, you know, what I mean by toxic, harmful, poisonous, whatever word you want to use. So yeah, monogamy is not something that I'm trying to discredit as a sort of concept. People are monogamous. There are people who only love one person at a time, or only attracted sexually to one person at a time, and that's totally legitimate. But toxic monogamy refers to the glorification of monogamy and how that can lead to people to feel sort of one up when they are monogamous and look at anything else as sort of one down and stigmatize it.
What would be an example of toxic monogamy, like in just everyday life?
Well, the big one that often comes up is around jealousy. So the way that we handle jealousy in a monogamous relationship when it becomes toxic is that we make our partners responsible for our feelings, as opposed to reflecting on what we're feeling and then making a decision about how we can handle that feeling in a way that respects everybody's autonomy. You know, when traditionally, when you're in a monogamous relationship, if your partner does something that you don't like and it makes you feel jealous, you can say, well, it makes me feel bad, so stop doing that thing. Whereas when you're in a non-monogamous relationship, you can't really do that. That's not, you've consented to being in a relationship where your partner will have other significant people. So then people have to do the work of assessing, am I being fair in my jealousy? Like, am I actually losing out and being treated badly? Or am I actually projecting my own insecurity here and it's something I need to handle? So in toxic monogamy, people would not do that process. They wouldn't think about that. They'd just go straight from, I feel bad, so you need to change. And that I see as an autonomy suppressing act. And that's why I think it's toxic.
Yeah, I think that the whole concept of toxic monogamy is so interesting to me. And like, I remember the first kind of I heard the word and instantly I was like, well, not all monogamy is toxic. And then I learned more about it. And I thought it was very interesting, just as though I'm interested in conscious monogamy, which is, kind of a way to consciously go throughout a monogamous relationship with somebody, which is also another very interesting, like the fun thing. I don't know if fun's the right word, but the good thing about a lot of non-monogamous creators and a lot of relationship and intimacy coaches and people in these spaces, we're not just telling you like non-monogamy is the only way to go, right? Like, we also talk about a lot of different ways that monogamy can be healthy, but it's all about creating healthy relationships within the framework of monogamy and not having these toxic monogamy kind of ways that our society has created for us. Like, we're supposed to be jealous of our partner. We're supposed to, look through their phones and like not, if they're getting DM'd from another girl on Instagram, like, this is terrible. So I just find it really, really interesting. I wanted to ask you though, what are some common misconceptions about non-monogamous relationships, and how do you think that they impact, the individuals who are in these non-monogamous partnerships?
Well, this is really related to toxic monogamy as well, because the reason why we have these misconceptions is because monogamy is elevated as the best, the most ethical, the most fulfilling way of doing relationships. And so when people hear that anyone is doing something different, they come up with all sorts of weird interpretations and misconceptions around that. So one of them being, for example, that non-monogamy is all about sex. So we're told that, if you are a good person, you will settle down with one person and you will want to have missionary sex with them for the rest of your life, and you'll die holding hands, in your deathbed. I don't know. There's this weird like fantasy of where you're supposed to go with your relationships and how you're supposed to feel. So when it comes to non-monogamy people here, I don't want to have that relationship, which I don't want to have a relationship that is my only relationship forever. I would like to have freedom to do other things. And when people hear that, they hear, I want to have sex with a bunch of people. And that's some people's truth. That's fine. I'm actually, I'm totally sex positive, and I'm not saying people shouldn't have sex with loads of people if that's what they want to do. But for many people, that is not what it is about. I'm coming from a polyamorous perspective. Again, not better or worse than other perspectives, just different. But, at least for me, it is absolutely not all about sex. It's about forming relationships with people. And when people tell me, oh, you only want this because you want lots of sex, I'm like, is that the only reason you want to have relationships with people? Because if it's not the only reason you do, then why are you assuming that about me? So yeah, there is this misconception that if you're non-monogamous, you're loose, basically. And
Well, and I
some
think
people
too
are, and some people
with
aren't.
swinging, that's a big conception or misconception about swinging too. And I would say most of the people in the swinger space, believe it or not, are just exactly what you explained. People who want connection, people who want friendship, people who want to build relationships with people and community with people. And like, yes, there are some swingers who are just there because they want to get their rocks off and they want to have a good time and that's it. And me and my partner were talking about this last night, how like we've had situations where we've had sex with strangers. We don't remember their name. We don't even know if they told us their name. I don't think they did, but that was super fun and hot for us in that one experience. But 90% of the time when me and my husband are in swinger spaces, it has a lot more to do with relationships and community as opposed to the sexual part of it. And swingers are like, we're here for sex, you know, so I can't even imagine, you know, this is all non-monogamous individuals. I just don't understand why so many people have that misconception, even about swingers, which is like, I guess it's meant for sex, but still, like, it's crazy to me. So,
I
yeah.
appreciate that clarification because obviously it's not my area of expertise, and I don't want to make any sweeping statements that, you know, stigmatize people who are listening to this podcast. That's not my intention at all. But I also was thinking as you were speaking, like, even, you know, saying it's just about sex. Sex is not just a physical act. Like, a lot of people require safety and connection and, you know, communication in order to have sex that's satisfying for them. So even if being non-monogamous is about having sex, in order to have sex, you need to have other things. Many people do. And in other situations, you don't really need that. Like you were saying with your story there, like you didn't need it, but very often that's something that you seem to enjoy about the experience of connecting sexually with people. So just about sex, what does that mean? What does it actually mean to say it's just about sex? It's not a physical act only. It's a connection. It's a vulnerability. It's sharing yourself with somebody else. So I also kind of react against, like, when people say it's all about sex, that they're saying it as if it's a terrible thing, as if that's something bad. But I think, you know, we don't need to view it that way. And sex can be a lot more than just a physical act.
It's all about pleasure too, you know, like sex is not just, I guess you could say, like penetration. You know, sex is pleasure comes from so many different places, and it's not just the act of sex. Like, and that's something that, you know, I think a lot of swingers as well, like, we focus on pleasure, and that's the most important part of it. But that's not all about it, right? I get pleasure from having a really stimulating conversation with somebody. Like, I'm mentally stimulated. I am demisexual. And there are a lot of people in these spaces who are demisexual or sapiosexual, which, for those of you who don't know, some of my listeners may not know. So, demisexual is that you have to have a emotional and intimate connection with them. So it could be any gender identification of a person, but you have to have some sort of emotional connection to them when you're demisexual. And sapiosexual is you're attracted to somebody's intelligence as opposed to their outwardly, you know, body and their whatever gender, Jennifer, I can't speak today. I don't know what it is. Gender identification it is. But yeah, so that's kind of where I sit. So I like to get, you know, I really like that intimacy and that those stimulating conversations with people. So.
I love that, you know, framing it not about sex, but about pleasure. And I think even then, there are people who would react really poorly against the idea that I'm in this for pleasure, because they're like, life's not all about pleasure. There's this idea in, at least in my society, and I think probably the one that you grew up in too, that we're supposed to suffer. We're supposed to work hard and be productive and be restricted and be silently unhappy in our relationships and resent our partners. And that's just what love is. And you just make it work. And if you say, no, screw that, I would like to have a pleasure-filled life, people react pretty badly against that. So I like that way of framing it.
Are there
Another
any other misconceptions? Yeah, I was going to say, is there any other ones?
Yeah.
There's a so many, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah, I didn't know where to start with it. So the other misconception about, well, this is something I get in the polyamorous community. I wonder if you get this too, that we're non-committal, that we cannot be responsible and committed in relationships. I think that comes from a misunderstanding of what the word commitment means, or a difference of opinion in what commitment means. There are actually two dictionary definitions. I don't have them in front of me, but just sort of the gist of them is, one of them is about restricting your activity, so committing to one thing and that thing only. So people might say, you know, you can be committed to Christianity. You can't be committed to Christianity as well as another religion, because then you're not committed, because commitment means being only in that one thing. And that's kind of, I think, how monogamous people view commitment. I'm committed to you, forsaking all others, as the marriage vows go. My definition of commitment is dedicating energy and effort to something in an intentional way. which you can do for many things, and we already do for many things. You know, like I'm dedicated to my work. I'm dedicated to like my clients as well as my writing and my social media activism. I'm dedicated to my health. I'm dedicated to my cat. I'm dedicated to my partners and my family and my friends and taking care of my home. I have a lot of commitments. So why can we not understand that commitment can
So
look that way in romantic relationships too?
I like to frame it as the friendship, and I was literally having this conversation with my husband last night. I have so many amazing, beautiful friends, right? I have male friends, I have women friends, and I love them so much, right? Does that mean if I love, my friend, like my best friend Jillian, do I love her more than I love my best friend Marissa? No. Does that mean that I can only be committed to being friends with Jillian, and I'm not allowed to be friends with Marissa, and I'm not allowed to be friends with, my other friend Jillian? I'm not allowed to be friends with my friend Joe. No, that to me, that makes no sense. But I always try to frame it like that, like, why do we have to only have this one commitment? I'm committed to all of my friends. I can be committed to all of my partners, right? All of the people who mean something to me in my life. And that is really how I look at it. Now, in the swinger space, I wouldn't say that people say that we're not committed. I would say that they say, well, you're just looking for an excuse to cheat, which again is kind of framing it as you can't be committed because, you're cheating, quote unquote, cheating, right? So I would say that is a better way to frame it, just in the swinger space, right? That's kind of a misconception that we get for sure.
It's just kind of struck me as you said that how cheating sounds like you're cheating at the rules of the game. And it's like it's almost got this like when people say that you're just looking for an excuse to cheat, I almost hear it, and I don't mean this in an awful way, but like almost this petulant quality of it. It's like you're getting around the rules, and like I don't
Right.
get to do that. Why are you doing that?
Because
So
that's what cheating is, though, right? Like to be dishonest, if you look it up in the dictionary, to be dishonest is what cheating is. And it says it even like in the framework of a game. So like I would say that when it comes to cheating, how can are we being dishonest with our partner if we're talking about boundaries and, communicating, that's not being dishonest. But you can cheat in a non-monogamous framework if you're not being honest with your partner. So that's really what cheating is being dishonest.
Absolutely. And I think the way that I frame it for people when they say that it's cheating is that we're playing different games with different rules. So if you're yelling at me because I'm picking up the ball, well, I'm playing rugby and you're playing soccer. So like it's a completely different game. It's okay in my game to pick up the ball. So yeah, I reject that misconception, but it is a common one, unfortunately. Another one is that we are selfish. We're doing it just for ourselves. It's kind of related to the pleasure one, but it's for other things too. And a lot of people, levy this accusation against non-monogamous people because they imagine, I think, that people are only entering relationships for what they can get out of them and not what they can give to them. And I think when people say it's selfish, it's almost like they're telling on themselves that that's why they're in relationships, unfortunately, for what they can get from them. But if you actually ask them to reflect on like why they're in a relationship, they will say, yeah, it's because I want to take care of this person and I want to make them happy and I want to bring joy to their life and excitement and I want to learn from them and things like that. It's not all about what we're taking, it's about how we're co-creating something better than the sum of our parts. So when people say that non-monogamy is selfish, my answer is that that's just not how relationships work in an ideal world.
No, I agree. And I think for me personally, when we started to become non-monogamous, I really started to develop this framework in my mind as like my love language to my partner is allowing my partner to 100% be themselves and be free, and enjoy that freedom. We got into this lifestyle so that we could both feel this sense of freedom, this sense of development as a human. We're developing together and growing together. So like for us, and sometimes when we get into non-monogamy, sometimes it can start out as something that's a little bit selfish, right? But that's where we do that self-reflection piece. And I always talk about this with people, wanting to get into non-monogamy, but they're not sure if they want to bring it to their partner. And I always tell them, I'm like, before you get into this, it's really that self-reflection piece. Because if you're getting into this for selfish reasons, because you want to have more sex or you want to have, better relationships than the one that you have with your partner or whatever it may be, like that's something to really self-reflect on and think about, why am I getting into this lifestyle? As opposed to how is this lifestyle going to enhance me as a person and my partner and our relationships? How are we going to grow together? That's something I really talk about a lot.
I think we're very aligned on that. I loved hearing you say all of that. So I agree that for me, love is about allowing somebody to be the fullest expression of themselves. And that means that over time, they will change, they'll learn new things, they'll encounter new information and new things about themselves. And I feel that, one benefit, this is not what we're talking about, but I'm going to say it anyway. One benefit of non-monogamy that I see is how it removes restrictions around how we connect with others and therefore what information we're exposed to and therefore how we grow. Not to say that people who are monogamous cannot have this, but people who are in that very sort of toxic, insular form of monogamy, where it's like we are each other's everything, they are restricted in how much they can deeply connect with other people, even on a friendship level. So I don't think it's selfish. I think, in fact, it's very loving to say that I want the people I care about to connect with others in whatever way they think is appropriate for them.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So I do want to talk a little bit about stigma, and what role stigma plays in non-monogamous relationship, and especially going back to like toxic monogamy and whatnot, and how does that affect someone's like mental health and well-being?
So one thing I've been thinking about a lot recently is this concept of out-group homogeneity. I don't know if you've come across this before.
Mm-mm.
So it's the idea that if you're in the out-group, as in like not part of the in-crowd, then people view you as being this homogeneous, monolithic, I can't think of other words that are less sort of highbrow. Sorry, I don't know why that's all that's coming to mind. If you, people will view you as all being the same, is what I'm trying to say, basically. So they think if you're not part of the monogamous norm, then you're all going to be the same. You all are in it for the same reasons. You're all like the exact same type of person. Whereas in the in-group, they view themselves as diverse. We're all different. We all have very different needs and values, and that's okay. But you're all the same.
So this is like when people say, and I know I'm sure you get it all the time, when people comment, oh, polyamorous people, why do you all look the same? Why do you all act the same? I get this a lot. Like, oh, you know that that person's a swinger. They just all look the same. Or why, and that is hilarious to me because we are all so different. But anyways, go ahead.
I'm just even looking at you and me on the screen right now, and we could not be more different looking than each other, I think. Different styles, different everything. So, the idea that outgroups are all homogenous is a stigma that we all have to deal with. And I've heard that too. People being like, why do they always look like this? And I'm like, what? Gorgeous. What do you mean?
Right.
So it's a really odd one. And I think that can, when people sort of yelling at you from all sides that this is who you are, it can be very hard to defend yourself against that and not have it sort of penetrate your self-perception. So I feel that, the stigma of, just not seeing us as individuals with our own individual needs can create a disconnect between ourselves and like what we actually are. So that's one really huge impact. And I think, there have been studies, I forget the specific ones, I apologize, but showing that how being part of the out-group can have long-term health implications, feeling that low-level shame and isolation and difference your whole life will have an impact on your health, because feeling accepted and part of a healthy network is a massive part of our well-being as humans.
Yeah, well, we're ingrained as humans. It's biological. We want to be accepted, right? We're like pack animals. We want to be in packs. So we want to be accepted by the people that are in our pack. So being in this very stigmatized, I guess, group of non-monogamous individuals, I think that we're moving in a lot of ways forward by destigmatizing it. And I'm sure you've seen within the past couple of months, we've had so much in the media about polyamory, which I love. I love seeing, but we're still very stigmatized. So I do believe that that plays a role in kind of mental health and well-being, and we still feeling that stigmatization can really, I know it's done it for me personally, just like, oh, am I doing the right thing by being out there and being a swinger? Are my friends doing the right thing? So I think that that plays like a internal conflict all the time for sure.
I think it will depend on your relationship with feeling different in general. I think there are some people who handle, just because of their personality or history or whatever, just they handle being different better because they always have been, or just they don't care, whereas other people, it's totally fair. Like you said, we're pack animals, community animals. We want to have this the acceptance of the people around us, and it really can hurt to feel like even people who love us do on some level judge us or not understand us, not see us really for who we are. And I feel like being truly seen and understood is a fundamental like human hunger that we all deserve to have met.
Yeah, but I think you're right. It definitely it depends on how that role plays for you. Because for me personally, even though I want to be accepted and I want to find my tribe and all, well, I don't really like that saying, but like I want to find the people around me, my community. Even still, I also do not like being, I'm individual. I've always been kind of a rebel. I don't like people to dress like me, to act like me, to do the same things as I do, because my individuality is very important to me. And I think that that also plays a role. So like I'm kind of that catch 22. Like I'm right in the middle at like I like to be like other people, but I also don't like to be like other people. I like to be a little bit of a rebel. That makes me happy too. So I definitely think that that plays a big role. So I wanted to ask too, like, what are some cultural and societal factors that contribute to this stigma that surrounds non-monogamy? Like, specific, I definitely think toxic monogamy is one of those, but I want to kind of hear your thoughts on that.
I was thinking about the concept of a cultural parent, which is a term that comes from the psychological modality transactional analysis, which is not the most well known, but it's, I'll just put it out there for anyone who wants to Google it, transactional analysis. And in transactional analysis, they have this idea that our personality is made up of the parent part, adult part, and child part. The adult part is us now seeing reality, reacting how we want to appropriately to the situation. Child part is anything that's old about how we used to behave and see the world. So all of our sort of trauma and past experiences are stored there, and our behaviors that we learned to take on in response to those. And the parent part is everything that was put into us by other people. So that includes parents, religious leaders, teachers, maybe even other siblings. It doesn't have to be older people necessarily, but also the culture. The culture is apparent that we're all kind of internalizing. And I think what often happens is that people have these cultural parent messages that they don't recognize are not their own thoughts. They don't
Kind of
recognize that it's
like
coming.
characters on TV. I actually just learned about this. Your subconscious can pick up those personalities of characters on TV, characters in movies, because that's such a big part of our culture, right? That shapes a lot of the movies that we've seen over time, shapes a part of our culture. And so subconsciously, we pick up on those behaviors.
Yeah, exactly. We are susceptible to that kind of thing. And I think it would be a bit arrogant for anyone to say, no, I don't get influenced by anything. I think we all do that. We're designed to be influenced by each other. We're social creatures. And so when we get this really strong cultural message that monogamy is the pinnacle of relationship success and the only moral way to connect with others, it's very hard to recognize that that is just something we learned, not a fact. The same way that some people just as a random different example, might believe it's correct to say you always go the extra mile. That's something that my dad told me, and so that's what is true about life. But as an ad, I'm saying my dad, as in my actual dad. As I've grown up and examined that phrase and the impact it had on the way I behaved, I started to say, okay, it's good to go the extra mile sometimes, but maybe not so much that you start hurting yourself. Maybe not that. And that's more an adult decision as opposed to a parent decision, if you see what I mean. So when it comes to monogamy, I think it's not about rejecting the idea that monogamy is a valid relationship model, but about examining, is it actually what we want? Is it actually in alignment with our values as opposed to the values of the culture we grew up in?
Yeah, and I think too, once, because I broke that, my parents know that I'm an outswinger, right? Both of them say this is not something that we would do. This is not a relationship structure that we would have, but we still love you very much and support your non-monogamous journey. My dad is currently, like, right now in the studio, like, writing a jingle for my non-monogamous podcast, right? My mom, she calls me all the time, and we talk about my friendships and my relationships through non-monogamy. So I do think that, like, I think a lot of people are afraid to let their parents in on that part of them, but it's also something that, and just because our parents may not be that way doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to reject you for being that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, I've heard a lot of people say very different things, and that is a real risk when coming out to family and
It
friends.
is.
I've been very lucky, similarly to you. I mean, my family and friends either just don't talk about it but tacitly accept it, or they're interested and they want to know and support. So I've been super lucky with that. Maybe lucky is not the word. Maybe I have cultivated a group of people who are more likely to be that way, and that's also, I've been privileged to do that, but maybe it's not
I would
luck.
say privilege, yeah, definitely. And, I think a lot of it comes from my religious background. I never was never raised in a home with, like, that was extremely religious. Like, my parents, we didn't go to church on Sundays. My parents were both, I always like to explain them as, like, free-spirited, kind of like hippie type people, which were they it's not like my parents were running around as, like, flower children, like, wearing flowers in their hair, listening to, like, Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. Like, that's not my parents. But what I mean is, like, they always wanted me and my siblings to just embrace who they were and be free-spirited, which is kind of how I grew up, which kind of changed the framework of who I am as a human, right? Like, I am this very free spirit. I found religion and spirituality on my own. I was never, my parents never pushed any of their value systems on me other than monogamy. I would definitely say that monogamy was pushed on me from a young age through my family structure because that's all that I saw. So that was very normal for me. But anything else, music or religion or anything like that, they never really pushed on me, which I was privileged to have that. There are some people in the non-monogamous lifestyle who are not as privileged as me in that aspect.
And also the privilege of where you live. Like, I live in a very multicultural and very progressive city. I live in London in the UK, so it's a very different situation for me than it is for somebody living in a super conservative state in the US where there's a lot of like heavy religious indoctrination. Not to say that all religion is bad, as you said, you found it in your own way in your own time, but there are a lot of people living with these like puritanical beliefs about sexuality and romantic connection from religion. And I feel that going back to parent, adult, and child parts, that's something that lives in our parents, this religious influence. And it's something which we internalize as just fact, but it's not fact that sex is bad and only good when it's between a man and a woman when they are married. That's not a fact. That is just some people's opinion. And I think that these religions, when they are this extreme and sort of like sex negative, I would say, they benefit from people mistrusting themselves. Because as long as people are kept doing everything they can to stay out of hell or to stay away from being ostracized, then they are so much more easy to control. So I think, sex negativity, when it comes from a religious angle, is an instrument of control. And so that's something that's a religious and societal factor that absolutely contributes to stigma around non-monogamy.
I agree. And I
Chris.
think too, the shame, it's this is specifically in women, right? So like that shame factor of you're supposed to suppress your sexuality because no man will want you if you don't suppress that. We want our women to be shamed about, slut shamed and body count shamed, right? And we want the men to like also reject them. If they have too high of a body count, if they are a very sexual person, you'll never be good enough, right? So these are societal and cultural things that have just shaped our cultures, that women are not good enough if they are quote unquote slutty. It's shameful to quote unquote be slutty or have sex with multiple people. Like that, those are all shameful things. So I think, as a societal, on a societal level, like that causes a lot of issue and shame within women specifically.
I was smiling as you said that, not because I'm laughing at it, but just like the idea that no man will want you if you're sexually liberated just makes me laugh because I'm like the first of all, I mean it's super heteronormative, let's just name that. But anyway, I the men who don't want me because I've had sex with other people are not men that I want particularly either. So I was just smiling about that. But yeah, I absolutely agreed with everything you said there.
Yeah, those are messages that I get a lot in my comment section on social media, like, no man's gonna want you, or you must you it's like throwing a hot dog down a hallway, right? Like, because that's how vaginas work, right? Like if we have sex with multiple men, then that obviously means that it stretches it out, and it's not like a rubber band. It never goes back to normal, right? It just stays stretched out, right? Like that makes so much sense. But these are like societal things that we have been, I feel like, first of all, are part of toxic monogamy and toxic masculinity too. Like these are just parts, so that culturally goes on to the women, and that's where we develop shame in society, and that's why a lot of that gets suppressed, and then we don't feel like we can be sex positive because we have these sex negative stigmas thrown on us, like the whole your vagina is going to stretch if you have more than one man. That doesn't make sense.
And yet penises don't whittle away to nothing when they get used too much. That's always a double standard that I found interesting. So yeah, it absolutely is something that affects women more than men in some ways. I think, even non-monogamy has been something that men have practiced for as long as human beings have been alive. Because of patriarchy, it's been okay for men to have mistresses. That's just been accepted. Even in the Bible, men had multiple wives and concubines and all the rest of it all the time. So non-monogamy has always been something that we accept for men, but for women, there's this expectation that we need to remain pure. And it just raises the question of like why men are not impure if they're having lots of sex, and the answer is patriarchy.
Except for in, so I'm like really a weirdo, right? Like I'm obsessed with non-monogamy history, which is hilarious. And all my friends are like, why do you study like ancient Egyptians and like their non-monogamy? But in a lot of like ancient cultures, like Mesopotamia and Egyptian cultures, it was actually like the women were non-monogamous, and that was a huge part of their culture, was like women being non-monogamous and having multiple relationships, and the men just kind of doting on these women. This is kind of like goddess culture and divine feminine culture. And it's so interesting that like in certain cultures in non-monogamy, it was definitely for men, especially like even now in culture, in different cultures, if you look at like the Hispanic culture or different Asian cultures, it's almost like a forced non-monogamy. But the non-monogamy is like, it's okay for the men to be non-monogamous, but not for the women. And the women just kind of sit back and allow it, right? And this is like in cultures today. But it's just really interesting how if you go back in time to ancient cultures, that non-monogamy was actually the first framework of relationships in ancient cultures, and then monogamy came in afterwards. And monogamy was created just for like land and like the it was like a rich kind of like a rich thing to get married and be monogamous, and it was more normalized to be like non-monogamous. So it's just very, very interesting if you study the background of non-monogamy. And then really monogamy didn't become popular like a popular thing until religion, patriarchy, Roman times. So it's just very interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's weird at all. I mean, maybe I'm weird too, but I find that fascinating. And there's a whole section in the book that I've written about the sort of human nature angle and what actually is human nature, and can we argue definitively that we are monogamous or not? It kind of is, it's not clear if you look at lots of different factors. So when it's not clear, we can't say with confidence that monogamy is natural for humans or the only natural way.
And
And I really
we can't say that it's natural, and but we also can't say that it's unnatural, right? So like I think that that's the important part of it is like I think in history it's kind of been, yes, non-monogamy did come first. We do know that, right? Like there But that's not to say that like monogamy is not natural, because I think for a lot of people, non-monogamy is nat or mon monogamy itself is natural, just like I think non-monogamy is natural for some people as well. But that's a part of the growth process of being human, like figuring out, is this natural for me personally, or is this something that society ingrained in me? And I think that's specific with monogamy. Especially as our communities are growing, I think polyamory, swinging, non-monogamy in general is a growing concept. We have 60% of Gen Z is now relating more to non-monogamy, and I think as Gen Alpha comes up, and I think as a society, it becoming more normalized, I think that we're going to find that more people are going to be non-monogamous because it makes more sense from an evolutionary concept. And this is something that I haven't really talked about, but it's kind of one of my theories is like evolutionarily, non-monogamy makes sense, right?
What's your view on that?
So my view is, you know how everyone says it takes a village, right, to raise a family, all those things. We hear that a lot. That's true. It does. So if you're non-monogamous and you have these non-monogamous polycules and these different communities that we're building around non-monogamy, this is going to make it easier, in terms of like the economy, right? Like inflation is going up, but our wages are not going up, right? So this is making it more difficult to, have homes and buy homes, and so if we are in these non-monogamous relationships, that makes it easier because now we don't have two incomes. We have three, four, five income families, right, to raise our children. And then, and that's kind of like the saying, like monogamy in this economy, like it's kind of a joke, but it's true. Like it makes more sense to have three or four income households as opposed to two income households, right? Especially with inflation and all that going up, right? So then on top of that, from an evolutionary standpoint, it just kind of makes sense for us as millennials and Gen Z and stuff like that to raise our children in families where there's more love and there's more affection for them, right? So yeah, I think from an evolutionary standpoint, it kind of makes monog or non-monogamy kind of makes more sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And thanks for explaining your view. I think, what I can imagine somebody saying in response to that is like, yeah, but why do you need to be fucking them? Sorry, are you allowed to swear on this?
You're
I can't
allowed to
ask.
swear.
Okay. So like,
And
why
then
do you need to be fucking them?
my argument to that would be platonic polyamory and
Exactly.
platonic relationships, right? And relationship anarchy. And not, no, you don't have to be fucking every single person in your polycule, right? Like we're not fucking everyone in our polycule, but like we have platonic relationships with them that are, on a different level. Like that's the question what is romance, right? Because you know how people say to be in a polyamorous relationship with somebody, it has to be romantic. Well, and this is my question for you. What is romance? Is that sex? Is that having candlelit dinners? Is that in having intimate conversations? Because I have intimate conversations and candlelit dinners with my friends, but we're not having sex. So does sex make the romance? That's the question.
Oh gosh, I don't know the answer to that, Carly, I'm afraid. I've been
I don't
thinking
either.
about it. I've
I don't
been
know the
thinking about it
answer to that.
recently. Yeah, I was recently co-hosting a workshop on relationship anarchy, which for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, it's just the idea that we approach all of our relationships, any type of relationship, not just romantic and sexual ones, with the view that we're not going to be hierarchical, we're not ranking one above the other automatically. And we're going to customize how those relationships look as opposed to following a prescriptive idea of what a relationship looks like. What does a friendship look like? What does a family relationship look like, et cetera. So I was hosting this workshop with my coworker, Laura Boyle, and somebody asked, what is romance? And I was really stumped. And then I spoke to someone else and I'm still really stumped. I mean, same as you. And I'd also say, when people say, why do you need to you have relationships with everybody to have a community. My answer is also like, why can't I? Why do you need me not to? And I think the reason they need people not to is because they do prescribe, they do derive some kind of satisfaction from something being only with one person or only with them. They derive some kind of safety from knowing that they are the only person providing romance and sexual satisfaction to somebody. And that's fine if that's your orientation, but there's no need to say that other people's orientation is less valid.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of people get confused, especially when we talk about non-monogamy in we frame it like this. A lot of people think that we're saying that monogamy is like bad. No, you can't be monogamous. You have to like join us, join our, non-monogamy cult, right? Like, 'cause monogamy is bad, which is absolutely not what we are saying. Like, we want people to have relationships that work for them. But we also want people to, and this is just from my perspective. I'm not saying like we as in you yourself, because you may be different, but I want people to have relationships that are healthy for them and whatever that looks like for them, if that's monogamous or non-monogamous. But I just want people to know that like non-monogamy is an option and it's a healthy option.
Yeah, absolutely. I want people to make autonomous choices as opposed to doing anything by default, because I think as soon as you're doing something by default, it's a parent action as opposed to an adult action. You're not acting from your own present day consciousness. You're acting based on something someone else told you to do before. So it's not a conscious decision. Yeah, and
Yeah,
that's
I
my
agree.
issue with it.
I agree. It has to be, and that's kind of where conscious monogamy, which if you don't know what conscious monogamy is, there's lots of stuff about conscious monogamy. If you're listening to this, conscious monogamy, I know that the Multi-Amory podcast did, they've done a couple podcasts on conscious monogamy. So I would definitely look into, I love the concept of conscious monogamy as opposed to toxic monogamy. But I did want to ask you, what role in allies and advocates play in addressing stigma and these misconceptions that are around non-monogamous relationships?
Yeah, well, I think as far as allies are concerned, I think educating yourself is the way to go, the same way that I, as an ally to other marginalized communities, want to educate myself instead of speaking on topics that I'm not educated on and, spreading misinformation. So basically, keeping quiet about things that you're not informed on and listening more than you speak. And then when you do have something useful to help sort of defend this marginalized community of non-monogamous people, don't remain silent. I think so often things are casually thrown about in conversations about non-monogamy, and I imagine a lot of people who actually are allies are listening and staying silent on it. And I get it, there are consequences to standing up for these things. People can be, like as we said earlier, very judgmental, very stigmatizing, and it's not always safe for people to speak up. But if you can, then in a gentle way, the same way we ask men to speak up on feminist issues, I would hope that they do that. And also trying to avoid adding noise to the existing noise about it. So saying, like trying to avoid saying stigmatizing things like, I mean, I've heard people say, I don't think I could be polyamorous because I just really want a deep relationship. And I'm like, do you know what you're implying when you say that? You're implying that my relationships are not deep. And that's really rude. It's really rude.
Or like something that's for the swinger community, something that adds to the stigma is, and this is just me coming from a content creator's perspective. So like adding to the stigma of gifting a human to your partner and having a threesome. So a lot of times I'll see people, you know, make videos and it'll be like, oh, I gave my husband his birthday present and I gave him this unicorn. Well, like that is creating a stigma around that person not being autonomous, and that person that not that's dehumanizing to the unicorn and or to the single female. Like that's dehumanizing to them when we use them as a gift. Or another one is like for you know, people do a lot of things for views, and I really think that that can be, even though you're in the swinger space or you're in the non-monogamous space, like that can be, you know, we have to think about what impact is that making. Is this harmful and you know, more stigmatizing the community, or is this something that I feel is helping the community grow and helping the community like be destigmatized, right? And these are conscious decisions that we make when we become content creators or people in these spaces who are out, like let's make sure that these are coming from a place of destigmatization as opposed to already stigmatizing.
That's a very good point. And yeah, as far as being an advocate of non-monogamy, I agree that we need to be really careful with the way that we talk about stuff. I find that, you know, in conversations like this, like cultural conversations where we're trying to shift the narrative that we have about relationships, we need to present our case calmly in order to convey our message, because a lot of people do switch off when they feel like they're being judged. So that's another sort of angle around it. It's just like, you know, in order to not contribute to the stigma and deepen people's reactions against non-monogamy, we need to try and tell them about it in a way that invites them into the conversation instead of making them feel like they're being judged. The only issue is that, and I come up against this a lot because I'm very careful with my words and I really never intend to judge anybody, but I often get people claiming that I am being judgmental when I think I'm being critical. The difference for me is that judgment is about assessing the worth of somebody and about that human being as opposed to what they're doing. And criticism is expressing my opinion, might be a negative one, about the actions that they're taking. I'm never calling into question the value of that human being. I'm not judging them. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying that you know, they're doing something terrible. I'm not villainizing them, in other words. I'm saying that the culture they've grown up in has propagandized one way of doing relationships. And they might be interested to know that there are lots of other ways. And if this were presented as a valid option for people, I think a lot of people would take it. So that's criticism for me, not judgment. But I do feel like we need to at least try to convey that we're not being judgmental. Otherwise, we've lost before we've even started.
Right. And then also understanding that everyone's journey is different than our own, and accepting that, like, as humans, the growth process, like, that's not linear, right? And it's not all going to look the same. It's going to be up and it's going to be down, and we're going to learn new things, and then we're going to, like, you know, fuck up, and then we're gonna like learn again. So I think that not understanding that not everybody's process with non-monogamy, and this is a big thing that I see in the community, is like, well, if you're not doing it this way, then it's wrong. It's not necessarily wrong, but we're gonna call in ethics to the conversation, and but also we have to remember that not everybody's ethics and moral values are going to be the same as ours. And it's okay to talk about it and have these conversations so that people know that this is an option for them. And I would definitely call in like the non-hierarchical, you know, values. Like for some people, hierarchical polyamory is unethical, but for some people, it's not unethical. And I think that calling in your own ethics and values is the most important thing, you know, and then also breaking down those societal stigmas. are these my ethics because someone told me that they were my ethics, or are these my ethics because this is what I truly in my heart and soul believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think it would be arrogant to say that any one of us knows what's ethically right or wrong. It is to a certain extent an opinion. And when I express my opinion about what I believe to be ethical, it is always with the framing of this is my opinion. And I think sometimes people will see somebody on a in a public space expressing an opinion and assume that they think that that person thinks everyone should think like them. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm just saying, like, this is my view. I hear a lot of people expressing different views. So I'm just going to express this view, and I'm just going to leave that here. You do with it what you will.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's the most important thing is like just because we think that's oh the whole part of non-monogamy, because there's, I feel like with monogamy there's kind of only one way to do it, and with non-monogamy there's so many different ways to do it, and each of those ways is valid and beautiful. Swinging, polyamory, relationship anarchy, solo polyamory, there's just so many beautiful ways to do it. I mean, there's kitchen table polyamory, and then there's parallel polyamory. Like there's all these different ways. And I think, our communities coming together is such a beautiful part of all of this too, is like learning from one another. That creates diversity when swingers and polyamorous people are in the same spaces and talking to each other. And, I can tell you as a polyamorous person, hey, this is really what the swinger lifestyle is. Those stigmas break down, right? And when Because I think swingers have a lot of misconceptions about polyamory and polyamorous people. And then when polyamorous people can come in and say, hey, we have sex parties too. Like we have orgies all the time. We're just like you guys. It helps us all bridge those gaps and create spaces that are healthier, happier, and more cohesive and harmonious, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I think just accepting the diversity of human beings is so important, and not assuming anything, being curious as opposed to being a assumptive. Is that the adjective of assume? Anyway,
Yeah,
it's
and
an assuming thing.
judgmental. Yeah.
Yes.
I, if you met somebody who's polyamorous that may be a certain way, just because that person was like that or did it like that or had that framework for their relationship doesn't mean the next person that you meet that's polyamorous is going to be the same. And that's the awesome thing about, non-monogamy in general is that we all have different ways of doing it, and those ways are all value. They all have value to them. So, any last words, anything, you want the listeners to know about you, your platform, about anything that we've talked about?
Oh, that's a big question. Well, about my platform, I'll just let people know where they can find me if that's okay. So, my Instagram handle is unapologetically with a Y, polygetically. And my Twitter or X or whatever it's called nowadays is unapologetic. I'm thinking about leaving though, as most people are. And same on Facebook, unapologetically. And I think, what else do I want people to know? That, there is help out there if they're struggling with any of these things, if they're facing stigma. I've had a lot of clients say to me that it's just so healing and supportive to talk to somebody who they don't have to explain their lifestyle to. They're not on the back foot having to justify it. It's just something that is understood and accepted, and then we can move on to problem solving. And so, yeah, if anybody's looking for non-monogamy affirmative coaching, I offer that, but I would also recommend finding some non-monogamous coach that you vibe with, who you feel like you'd feel safe with, and reaching out for help if people are looking for support.
Yeah, because it takes that stigma out of it. I know in the past, me and my partner have like reached out for, and this is also like me as a sex worker, because I'm also a sex worker. I've reached out for help, and there's been so much stigma associated with not only being non-monogamous, but being a sex worker, right? So, I think it's really important that we have these non-monogamy and sex positive affirmative type coaches, somebody who's in the LGBTQ. I don't have to explain that to you. I don't, you're going to respect my pronouns. You're going to respect, me as this, bisexual, non-monogamous person. So I think that it's really important if you're in these spaces and you're looking for help and you don't know where to find it. There's a lot of different coaches out there that you can vibe with, Ro being one of them, but for sure. And we'll put all that information in the show notes. And last question is, what advice would you give to somebody who wants to really work on that stigma and doesn't want to be stigmatized anymore, or be a part of these spaces? Like, what advice would you give to them?
I think what helped me the most in coming to terms with who I was and feeling secure in that, and like nobody can take it away from me, no matter how judgmental they are with me, was knowing that I had a network of people who support me and love me and accept me for who I am. And I have to say that when I came out as polyamorous to people in my life, it was for me a beautiful experience. As we said earlier, I know it's not the same for everybody. So what I would say then is to seek out polyamorous community so that you can learn that you do not deserve the stigma that you're having to deal with, and that there are people out there who will make you feel normal because you are.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with you if you're non-monogamous. You are valid, you are supported, and yeah, I would agree that finding communities has been the most helpful thing for me personally. Just finding community and finding people within my support system. And like, sometimes those communities, even if you're in the polyamorous or swinging spaces, sometimes those communities, just because they're polyamorous or swingers, like, you still might not fit in. And you might need to find new communities that you do fit in with. Like, for me personally, I fit in a little bit more with the polyamorous community, even though I'm a swinger, which sounds really strange and weird, but just a lot of my value system and ethics come with the same as those who are polyamorous. So, as opposed to the swinger lifestyle. So, like, I just found new communities that I can reach out to and a new support system. So, definitely, I agree. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And, we hope to hear from you soon. And if you guys are not following Unapologetically, make sure that you go and follow them on social media. So, thank you so, so much.
Thank you. It's been
And
so interesting.
yeah, for sure. Thanks for riding on the Pineapple Express with us.
Most people have unprotected oral sex, right? Be honest. Now think about your last STD test. Did your doctor tickle your throat with something that looked like a giant Q-tip? Probably not. Yet that's the only way to check for oral gonorrhea or chlamydia, which are often asymptomatic. You need a better doctor. You need shamelesscare.com. Use coupon code CHIC, that's CHIC, at checkout.